It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stenz in for Kate Archer Kent. With school starting up, I want to know the word that first comes to your mind when you think about sending your kids back to the classroom. Is it relief? Excitement? Trepidation? Anxiety? Are you worried that your kids are behind academically after last year? Are you wondering about how to keep them healthy until the pandemic ends? How are your kids adjusting? Give us a call. We're at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We have two experts to help us talk through it. Travis Wright is an associate professor of early childhood education at UW-Madison School of Education. Welcome, Travis.
Morning.
And Erica Bullock is an assistant professor of mathematics education and curriculum studies, also at UW-Madison. Good morning to you, Erica.
Good morning, Molly. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm glad you both can join us as we're kicking off this new school year. I know it's on the minds of so many right now. Are we starting off this year behind? I mean, Travis, can I start with you? For parents who may be wondering if last year's educational experience was maybe just a wash, how are you talking to parents about that, about starting off the year?
You know, I think when we feel like we're starting from behind, we're already making an uphill battle for ourselves. Children are where they are. And as educators, as parents, as family members, we just have to meet them where they are and do whatever we can to help them continue to move forward. You know, children may have lost content last year, and the research shows that, especially for kids from, you know, families with that experienced other types of struggles last year, children may not have received as much direct content instruction. But children were also at the same time developing a lot of coping skills. They were developing resilience in other ways. And so I think this year we have to meet children where they are and make the best of the path in front of us. So celebrating what they're bringing, being really mindful and aware of what they're sort of struggling to sort of wrap their minds around, and doing everything we can to help them be successful.
That's such a positive way to think about it. Erica, how do you see it?
I fully agree with Travis. I think that I have watched parents, families, and educators work so hard over the last year to try to create something as great as possible out of a really impossible situation. So I think to describe it as just a loss is really something that discounts a lot of that work. No one wanted to be in a virtual learning environment for the majority of the last year. But what we have to look at is what were we able to accomplish? And also what learning happened outside of the virtual walls of the classroom. A lot of the kids learned a lot of things about themselves, about the world, and about their academic things that are related to their academic subjects over this last year and a half. And we want to make sure that we make space to acknowledge that and bring that learning into the classroom as well.
Is that something that's currently the subject of study right now? Is this something that we might glean some knowledge from in the years to come? What exactly the impact of this past year was, Erica?
Oh, definitely. I know several studies I have one myself that is beginning, where people are trying to look at exactly what the effects of the last year have been, both positive, if you will, and negative. So I do think, unfortunately, research runs a lot slower than we'd often like. So I think in the coming years, we are going to learn a lot about virtual learning and its opportunities and maybe some of its disadvantages, and just about the type of learning that happens in homes and families as well across different cultural backgrounds and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And Travis, are you seeing a lot of families that are really adjusting to being back into a classroom, being back into a social setting after the year we've had with so many districts being virtual and so much instruction being in front of a screen?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think what's important to keep in mind is that there wasn't just one COVID experience of the last year. Children and families had lots of different types of experiences. Some children actually struggle with the typical school environment because of, you know, peer pressure or different expectations or whatever. And so there are actually some children that thrived with the benefit of sort of more individualized instruction. And so those children are experiencing a lot of anxiety about returning to the classroom because of the typicality of it all. Of course, many families are worried about children's safety and how they're going to cope with the sort of ongoing pandemic with the return to classrooms. So many families are having separation anxiety, children and parents, because they've spent a lot of time feeling more connected. And certainly there are external stressors that are just making it scary for them to be apart. And I think a lot of teachers and kids are sort of adjusting to the new routines. You know, for young children, particularly a year away from routines, rituals, structures, there's just some reentry there that kids have to learn. And so I would say that parents and teachers need to be really patient with children sort of readjusting to the demands of the classroom. And also, just because kids may have been able to be sort of successful in that environment in the past, it doesn't mean that they necessarily kind of remember the rules of the game. And so I would encourage families and teachers to really spend some time over the next month sort of revisiting routines, being very explicit in explaining to children sort of what the expectations are, how things might be done, you know, getting kids into a bedtime, getting kids into a morning and nighttime ritual, talking with them about ways that they might sort of be successful during the day. Those are all some things that we can do to help kids be more attuned to the expectations of the sort of in-person learning environment, and to help them feel a little more in control of their daily lives as well as they're navigating anxiety.
Right. And I imagine there's some positive routines, you know, some of the like picking out of back to school clothes and getting your backpack ready and your lunchbox, like all of the kind of familiar comforts that maybe weren't present last year with the change of routines. There's some excitement there.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been sort of in the midst of that in my house. I have 8-year-old twin daughters who are starting third grade, and they are just thrilled to sort of, you know, pack a lunch, have their backpacks. We got to do some school shopping. And so I think sort of that sense that things are returning a little more to what they thought school would feel like is actually helping them feel excited. And so I would encourage, you know, families to capitalize on that, sort of help kids create some positive expectations as well. So, you know, one of the things that we have been doing with our own kids is sort of asking them sort of, you know, what are you worried about, but also what are you excited about this year? We're sort of talking about sort of, you know, what's one thing that you want to do for yourself this year? So what's a new thing you want to learn? What's something that you want to make out of this year? And that's it's sort of the intention behind that is to help the children start to realize that they can have some control over their experiences, even if there are lots of things that are outside of their control. And I think especially at a time when things do feel so much larger than, you know, the parents and the family and the children, having some things that help us feel anchored, that help us feel safe, and that help us feel like we can choose and have some control over is really important for helping all of us to stay grounded in these uncertain times.
Yes. We're speaking with Travis Wright, an associate professor at the UW-Madison School of Education, also Erica Bullock, assistant professor, also at UW-Madison. And I want to invite in a caller. I want to talk to Laura from Manitowoc. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning. I guess my purpose for calling is just to represent, I think, an uncommon side of virtual learning during a pandemic, and to touch on something one of your guests touched on also, and that is, I mean, that there were some positive results of the virtual learning. Just to give you our anecdotal experience, my son was entering an important year of school, his eighth grade. And when the pandemic hit, we had a choice to have him be in the classroom or to learn virtually. And we chose for him to learn virtually. And we kind of did some hard thinking at the start of it and confronted it like so many other things in life, and did a lot of talking and introspection about, you know, how this was a big change, how there were a lot of unknowns, and focused a lot on resilience and kind of rolling with the punches. And I think he really, really just blew us all away with how he stepped up to the plate. And not to pat us on the back or anything, but I think to go into it with that intention that this is going to be a challenge, I think he really learned some lessons about adaptation there. And he yes. actually ended up having a great year and really learning a lot about self-sufficiency and lots of other skills for, that'll help him going into, you know, high school and beyond.
Oh, Laura, so good to hear. Thank you so much for your call this morning. And so glad you had a good experience. Erica, is that a common experience that you have heard from parents, that attitude and kind of how you approach the situation, how you go into it with a positive intent and reinforce the challenges and the possibilities of the year, that really can affect your students' outcomes?
Oh, absolutely. I think what Laura highlights on several levels is really important for us to think about. I agree with Travis and with Laura that there were a lot of success stories in the virtual learning environment that we do need to pay attention to. I hear that a lot from families of children of color, that there were a lot of pressures that they did not have to deal with in the classroom that made the learning environment a little bit more comfortable. And we have to acknowledge that. And think about what that means for us going forward. In terms of attitude, we talk about this a lot in mathematics. We hear a lot of conversation about math anxiety and how discouraging parents from saying things like, oh, well, I was never a math person, I never got this, and how that really can erode the child's sense of self-esteem and self-efficacy as it relates to mathematics. And so that attitude has been borne out in study after study to actually have an effect on the learning. And I would add to that, that our silence about mathematics does the same. So if in our homes, we're only looking at reading, we're only reading with our kids and not engaging in mathematics, that silence can also kind of inadvertently undermine that child's confidence in learning mathematics specifically.
Erica, I want to talk more with you about that. We are going to take a quick break. I'm Molly Stentz, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. We're talking about the start of the new school year and the return to the classroom. But the coronavirus pandemic is not yet over, and there's still no vaccine for kids under 12. And are we making up for lost time after our pandemic year? We've got two education professors here to help us wade through all of it, answer your questions. We're talking to Travis Wright and Erica Bullock from UW-Madison. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or ideas@wpr.org. Well, Erica, we were just talking about math and the importance of parents and caregivers and educators helping set a positive intent for their children's success. And I wonder what you saw over the past year with the virtual experience. Was mathematics, was that a subject that lent itself better to virtual learning? Was that perhaps something that was able to be done more effectively in a virtual environment? What did you see over the past year?
I think it's hard to say kind of in a blanket way. I think there were a lot of opportunities that teachers found to teach math in very different ways that were incredibly effective. So I do think that I can say for sure that math was not kind of left out or set aside in the virtual learning transition. There was definitely a lot of great opportunity and a lot of great teaching and learning happening for sure. I think there was a lot more discussion around the mathematics than you might see sometimes in the classroom, because you were kind of forced to actually talk through what students were doing and what teachers were doing. So there was a lot more conversation, which is something that most mathematics educators have been advocating for a long time. So I think that the virtual learning environment created an opportunity for discussion, for collaboration among students, for individualized attention, as Travis was mentioning earlier, that those opportunities sometimes get a little bit lost in the regular classroom environment.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you have to parents who feel like their children may be struggling or may be behind, or just not enjoying the love of mathematics? What advice would you have?
Well, I think there are several things. Number one, we've been talking about kind of putting a positive light on this conversation about learning loss and things like that. But I want to make sure that we also avoid what might become toxic positivity. Mm-hmm. We don't want to talk to our children about, you know, our failings in mathematics or our dislike of mathematics and kind of put a period on those things. It is important for us to be realistic with our children about struggles that we did have and how we got through them or what we wish we would have done. So it's really important to be realistic with our children, especially older children, about those struggles. So I don't want to say don't talk about to your children about struggles at all, but make sure you talk with them in a really productive way so that it does not kind of participate in some shutdown. I think another thing that I would recommend is math is often a place where parents will seek supplementary education services for their children. What I mean by that is things like external tutoring that teachers provide or schools provide, services within the community, church tutoring programs, even YouTube videos we would consider supplemental education. I think it's really important that parents kind of look at that approach to supporting their child's education with a really team-based strategy in mind. And what I mean is that parents should work with the teachers to help to understand what really is going on. Where are the challenges really lying with their child's performance? So if a child comes home with a D on an algebra test about solving equations, the problem might not be solving equations. The problem might be that they actually need some support related to integer operations or understanding fractions and things like that. So sometimes that D is actually a symptom of a more an underlying problem that needs a little bit more remediation. So it's important that parents and teachers work together on that. And then as you seek supplemental services, you can be really strategic about what you're looking for and what skills you're looking to support your child with. And I think at that point, those services become a lot more effective.
Sure. And I don't want to overlook the pandemic that is still ongoing and still in the background, as we know that more children are contracting the coronavirus. We know the Delta variant is more transmissible. We know that there's a lot of discussion right now in schools around safety measures. And Travis, I wonder what advice you have for parents for setting expectations or tones with your children about safety at school.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I think that we have to really sort of separate sort of the child level from the society level. And we, as parents and as advocates, sort of need to be working at both. At the child level, I think the more that we can do to help children feel more power and control and safe in their own lives, the better they'll do. So talking with children about masking as a way to keep themselves safe, talking about washing their hands, talking about social distancing, giving them specific strategies that they can use to take care of their bodies and to keep themselves safe will help children feel like they have more power and agency in what is a really scary time for lots of us. I think at the societal level, we need to be talking more about sort of mask mandating. There's pretty robust research that has emerged over the last several months that suggests that when all teachers and children in buildings use masks, that schools are actually quite safe. And so my concern is that we've politicized a public health issue that is actually creating sort of less safety than children might be experiencing in teachers. And so I think that we need to be, you know, at the social level, talking about really acting in children and families' best interest in sort of following the science. And I think that also sort of maps on to some of the, you know, I really loved Erica's use of the term toxic positivity. I think in today's conversation, we're focusing a lot on the individual. And I think absolutely in challenging times, children have a chance to see how strong they are. And I think having really explicit conversations with children and families about what they've learned, how they've benefited, how they've grown, what they might even redo based on sort of what they've experienced this year. Those are all really good ways to consolidate the learning of this challenging time. But I do think we would be remiss if we didn't say that COVID has also just exacerbated and revealed sort of the structural inequity. So all children didn't have equal access to learning opportunities or the same types of learning experiences during the previous year. And so I think being responsive to that and making sure that as children return to schools, that schools are able to make sure that, you know, kids get the remediation and support that they need to be successful is also incumbent upon us to make sure that all kids can feel safe and learn and grow and look into the future and feel excited.
Yes. Well, best of luck to you both for the school year ahead for you both. And thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Molly.
Yes, thank you, Molly.
We've been speaking with Travis Wright, an associate professor in counseling psychology at UW-Madison School of Education. Erica Bullock is assistant professor of mathematics education and curriculum studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Molly Stenz. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.